This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Hello and welcome to The Forum. My guest on this weekend's show is Chris Whittem, Illinois Department of Natural Resources Forest Stewardship Manager. And welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris, our topic of conversation today is invasive honeysuckle. It's a problem that has been, I guess you could say, growing over the past few years. And we're going to talk today about the plant and I guess we could say the possible eradication or maybe getting it off one's property if they choose to do so. But first off, if you would, could you just basically talk a little bit about the plant itself and sort of maybe some of its history? Because I know it wasn't what it was, say, 20 years ago versus what it is now.
Right. Well, the bush honeysuckle has been planted as an ornamental. It was actually promoted for wildlife usage many, many years ago. It was planted very widely due to the rapid growth and the bright red berries and the thought that wildlife would utilize those berries, which the wildlife does utilize those berries. However, they do not have the nutritional value that that normal native plants have. So I know a co-worker of mine refers to it as Twinkies for birds. In other words, the sugars that are there, they just don't have the they don't have the nutritional value that our wildlife needs. The animals eat them, obviously, but it's not. They would be much better off with native plants. So it was planted in our landscape, and now it is being transported by birds very heavily now. It springs up everywhere.
You could see maybe 20 years ago, farm fields really had no border like the honeysuckle plant, and now it seems like many, many of them are lined with it. And the honeysuckle plant actually is invasive, I guess, its roots and stuff, too, as far as it can kill off native habitat, correct?
Yes. The bush honeysuckle, one of the biggest issues I see with it is once it starts springing up, a lot of landowners don't notice it because it might take it several years from the first time it starts showing up. And then it's just one of those things where we see it on a daily basis and we don't realize what's going on, unfortunately, how thick it's getting. Once the bush honeysuckle fully colonizes an area, it gets so dense and puts out so much shade that it will shade out all native vegetation. The only thing that I've seen that can survive under a closed canopy bush honeysuckle is actually another non-native invasive plant. So it's really sad because a lot of people, like you said, in the spring, in southern Illinois, south of Interstate 64, I believe it's already leafing out right now. So when you look back through the woods as you're driving along where the bush honeysuckle's at, you can see this lime green, this lime green shade where the bush honeysuckle, the leaves are just now emerging, and a lot of people have become accustomed to seeing that, and they think it's normal, not realizing that it's not normal and it's a very bad thing.
In addition to the canopy, the root systems also can become rather a problem.
Yes, the bush honeysuckle, the root system on a bush honeysuckle plant is actually, the roots are very shallow. So a lot of times the bush honeysuckle is fairly easy to remove. They actually sell their tools that are sold to basically giant pry bars to pry them out of the ground. And some people opt for that because they would rather not use herbicide or other methods. But it's just, there's a lot of roots there when you get that many plants per acre, because there can be, in doing forest inventory and whatnot, I've had counts where there were in excess of 30,000 plants per acre. So it can get really thick.
Question that I have that some of, Sam, my friends and people I know have, as far as this invasive plant, is that also it hurts things. That's another springtime favorite, mushrooms. Now, that's just a bunch of us talking, but from a professional standpoint, have you seen that, or has there been studies about, its root systems and stuff can affect even like where mushrooms grew?
As for studies, I haven't seen information. That doesn't mean that the research isn't out there. It's just something that I haven't had time to do the searching for and whatnot. It makes sense that the bush honeysuckle would impact things such as morels, you know, along with the native vegetation, because of the microsite, the climate changes underneath the bush honeysuckle, if you will. Because with it leafing out as early in the spring as it does, and then providing that that canopy cover, it has tremendous impacts on the natural airflow that would occur in a forested situation. The airflow is reduced, you know, down close to the ground. There can be a higher humidity, actually, but at the same time, the soil moisture can be diminished at a more rapid rate because of all that fine root system that's right there under the soil surface. So you've got the combination of several different things that are modifying the site, you know, the soil temperature and, you know, and all these other things that are involved. So it would stand to reason that, you know, things such as the morels could be a negative impact. And then from another aspect, once the bush honeysuckle gets bad, good luck to a person trying to get through it to even look for mushrooms.
If you want this stuff off of your property or the eradication of it, what are some of the methods that you would recommend or that are preferred?
What I normally tell landowners when it comes to dealing with bush honeysuckle within legal means, I guess I should say, use any tool that you have at your disposal, which, and normally from a forester's perspective, that includes things as simple as hand pulling of the plants, the smaller ones when you're out there, because when the soil's moist, they're very easy to pop out of the ground. Prescribed burning can help keep the bush honeysuckle in check, or at least get, you know, it can help there because the fire can consume some of the seed bank that's there. And at the same time, you know, there's chemical options out there, and you know, I feel compelled to tell people if you're going to utilize chemicals, always make sure you're using chemicals, you know, that are labeled for this type of use and use them according to the label. And also, when talking about chemicals, you know, you can do foliar application. I would strongly recommend to people that when the leaves are first emerging in the spring, until those leaves are pretty much full size, I normally recommend to people that they don't try doing any chemical application of any form to the bush honeysuckle. You know, and that's just because there's so much growth, you know, so much energy coming up out of the roots that I've seen a lot of instances where people go in and spray the bush honeysuckle early in the spring, and it looks like it's dead a few weeks later, but then the next year it will leaf out and appear to be just fine. Foliar application, where you're spraying the foliage of the plant, is one option. There's also chemicals that are labeled for cut surface. In other words, you would go in and physically cut the bush off and, you know, fairly close to the ground, and then apply this herbicide to that cut surface. And you have to be careful there. I will warn people, because all depending on what chemical you're using, there's so many stems per acre out there when you're doing that method of control, or can be so many stems, that there can be root uptake from the native trees. So there's certain chemicals that are, you know, more prone to injuring different tree species. So you'd really want to consult somebody that knows something about dealing with this type of vegetation in these systems. So, and there's also chemicals that can be used. They're called, for basal application, where the plant isn't cut off. You don't spray the foliage. You literally coat the bark, the lower portion, I believe the bottom 8 to 12 inches, all depending on what chemical it is, what the label guidance is. So chemical application through foliar application, cut surface application, basal application, physically just hand pulling the stuff, and prescribed burning. You can't eliminate this, for the most part. I guess you could eliminate it from a property using any one method, but generally with the various sizes of the plants and things of that nature, that's why I tell people use a combination. You can go through and spray, and inevitably you're going to miss plants regardless of how you spray. So then if you're walking through, whether you're turkey hunting or mushroom hunting or just out bird watching, whatever, especially in the spring, you see those small plants, reach down and pull them out of the ground.
And going back to something you brought up, as far as spraying the foliage, you said not too early in the spring because the plant or the honeysuckle could come back. Also, probably that would be bad to early vegetation that is good vegetation as well, because that would knock it out as well, correct?
That's correct. And you always, each situation, you have to look at it and make the choice. You have to look at how bad the problem is. And I've seen situations where, from certain aspects, it didn't matter what time of the year during the growing season you sprayed, because the native vegetation was gone. The bush honeysuckle had already shaded it out. So in a situation like that, there wasn't a whole lot of, concern in some situations, as long as you're, using the proper chemical at the proper rates and following, all the laws involved there. What a lot of people recommend when it comes to, if you're going to do foliar application on bush honeysuckle, is to do it late in the fall. And because normally the bush honeysuckle will stay green and will take up the herbicide up into, all depending on where you are in the state, up into the middle of November. So in that situation, if you're spraying, the first week, second week in November, all depending on where you are in the state, the native vegetation, the majority of it has gone dormant. So as long as you're using the proper chemicals at the proper rates, the collateral damage is going to be minimal.
As far as another aspect of this, I've heard about it, and I'm sure you know about it. Say for large property owners or so forth, this is even now where they've gone to, there's aerial application?
Yes, and the aerial application, some people aren't crazy about the aerial application because obviously you're applying herbicide from the air. So some people don't care for that at all. And the response I have to people is, when it comes to aerial application, applicators are doing things as safely as possible, utilizing the chemicals that are labeled properly and whatnot. And one of the main reasons for doing that is the cost. I've seen situations, I was in the private sector for many, many years and did a tremendous amount of exotic, non-native and invasive species control, bush honeysuckle primarily. And in the private sector, it costs a lot of money to go in and control bush honeysuckle, because a person has to be licensed and know what they're doing and have the insurance to do this on another person's property. And they have to go out there and they have to physically walk the property and cover, every square foot of every acre. So that's a tremendous undertaking, even if you're dealing with 5 or 10 acres. But if you start talking about 40 acres, 160 acres, 500 acres, whatever it might be, it's very expensive to have somebody go in and do it on the ground, walk all that property and treat all the bush honeysuckle. So the aerial application can cover a very large area in a very short period of time, and that application is done in that fall window where I was talking about earlier, where the native vegetation, including the trees, the majority, has gone dormant. We don't want to injure the trees, and there are some plants, some sedges, grasses, ferns, and things of that might be present. And once again, it comes down to one of those things where you have to weigh the collateral damage and say, the bush honeysuckle is such a problem, it's causing all these issues. Do we risk killing this native vegetation that stays green year-round or very, very late into the season? And that's something that a person has to weigh out from each different situation and say, if I don't do anything, is this plant going to be gone? Right now it's still here, the seed bank is still there, so even if those individual plants might be killed during an aerial application, will they come back? Versus if we don't do anything with the bush honeysuckle, it's going to take over and shade this stuff out, and it's going to be gone, period.
We have been talking about one taking care of their own property, basically, except for the aerial applications and things like that. But, of course, you're with IDNR and Forest Stewardship Manager. Are there programs IDNR has, or is there recommendations of things people can do to maybe find out more about eradication if they don't want to do it themselves or become more knowledgeable about it?
Yes. A person could contact the Department of Natural Resources, the Division of Forestry, Division of Natural Heritage, or the Wildlife Division. Any of the, you know, these eight divisions within the Office of Resource Conservation, all the people, you know, deal with this stuff. We have these different programs, programs that have been around for years, Acres for Wildlife. We have the Forest Stewardship Program, the FDA program, is what we call it, Illinois Forest Development Act program. We have the Illinois Recreational Access Program, and there's many programs. And all of the programs, conservation stewardship programs, another popular one, all these programs we recommend to landowners and try to provide guidance and, if possible, as much assistance as possible. Is available to, inform them, make them knowledgeable, explain what the problem is, explain how to deal with it, provide them other resources that they can tap into for information and assistance. There's private organizations. There's also federal agencies, Natural Resource Conservation Service, University of Illinois Extension. Has a very good publication out about how to deal with different non-native invasive species. And then there's also private organizations such as the Illinois Forestry Organization, or Association, my apologies, Illinois Forestry Association, or even the tree farm. It's just, to an extent, I guess you could say it's almost like support groups where, there's a wealth of knowledge out there, and unfortunately a lot of people don't know where to go. And it's real simple. You've just gotta start making phone calls and talking to people. The assistance is the technical assistance, the knowledge is there. You just have to start flipping a few rocks and find out who you need to talk to.
And I guess maybe there is a website for the Forest Division where they can look up something or find those phone numbers to contact the proper person they're looking for?
Yes, or a person could just call the Department of Natural Resources, and normally it would go to a receptionist. If you call the Springfield office, the headquarters, you'd get a receptionist, and if you just told the receptionist what you were wanting to know, then they direct the call to the proper person. Or if a lot of people are familiar, landowners are familiar with their local offices, their county offices, whether it's the Natural Resource Conservation Service office or the different offices for the Department of Natural Resources. They're scattered throughout the state. A lot of people know these offices, know these people, or even the Farm Service Agency. If you go in and talk to any of these, they can provide you the guidance, the phone numbers, point you in the right direction.
Chris Whittem, thank you for joining us on the forum program this weekend.
No, thank you.
And you can join us again next weekend for another edition. For WSMI, I'm Rick Davis.